You're listening to the Cairo Success Podcast, where we reveal the secrets to a massively successful practice. Here's your host, Dr. Tori Robeson.
Welcome, winners. I am optimistic, positive, and excited about chiropractic, excited about reaching people with my practice and building an exceptional life of productivity, prosperity, generosity, while filled with love, fitness, and fun. My purpose is to become a smarter, more powerful. By the way, what is power? Power is your ability to make your life the way you want it. How powerful are you? Are you becoming more powerful or less powerful? More capable, more driven, using the will of the mind, and becoming a superior version of myself by ever increasing my awareness, knowledge, understanding, motivation, hands-on skill, communication skill, and mastery in the art of exceptional living. Anytime you train with me, you can expect more new and great new patients. You'll become a more capable motivator and persuader of people. You'll make smarter long-term decisions in all areas of your life. And of course, anytime you train with me, you will become energized physically, mentally, and financially. Training today will start with a law of success. The law of success I want to just mention briefly today is the law of the definite chief aim. The law of the definite chief aim, in other words, in your professional world, we have to have a main thing that you're focused on, a definite chief aim. Now, we could have a definite chief aim with a relationship. We could have a definite chief aim with your health, like say a target weight or a certain time in a competition that's coming up or a belt received in a martial art or a certification in something. We can have a definite chief aim in practice, a collection goal for the year, a certain number of visits in a day or in a week, and we can have a definite chief aim financially, total dollar amount saved by the end of the year, amount you're automatically saving every week, total dollar amount saved by the age of 50, 65, or 70. So you see here, we can have main goals. The definite chief aim is like the big, singular, main goal. Here at Winner's Edge, the definite chief aim is nearly always your collection goal for the year. Why? Because for that to become real means your new patients were good, PVA was good, converting people was good, the financial processes and collecting money were good. It means all these other things had to be good. Now, we could even go beyond that and say, what's the total dollar amount you have saved for the year? Because that would then mean that your taxes had to be good and your habit of saving had to be intact. We could also say that the definite chief aim as an idea could be what your net worth is by the end of the year, because that takes into consideration debt and everything else. In fact, your net worth at the end of the year is your grade for the year. Not as a husband or a wife or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, as a mom or a dad or a son or a daughter, okay, or as a teammate or as a person in the eyes of God, but as far as in the marketplace, your net worth is your grade. And we could have a whole training on that. In fact, we might. But definite chief aim, the law of the definite chief aim states we have to have a main singular goal that's sort of always in our mind that we're working toward. And for here and for our purposes now, it is your collection goal for this year and for next year. That's your definite chief aim. Because for you to reach that goal means all these other things had to come into place. The team must have been okay. Layout must have worked out okay. All of these things had to fall into alignment for you and in your favor for you to reach that number. We always have to have a, quote, DCA, a definite chief aim, which is why at every single Winner's Edge seminar, we write down our definite chief aim. It is always clear, it is always known, and it is always being modified as we grow over time. The definite chief aim. And the law of that states that your life, the coincidences, the circumstances, and the situations will fall into alignment and bring you what is required if you have a strong and smart definite chief aim, because it activates your reticular activating system, which is the part of your brain that makes you aware of whatever is necessary for you to reach that goal, and it moves you in that direction, makes the decisions that will guide you toward it. It's the autopilot mechanism inside your mind that will make you notice things you need to notice to get there, do things you need to do to get there, process things in a way that you need to process them to get there. So the definite chief aim engages the part of your brain that sensitizes you to everything that's required to reach it. No definite chief aim, no dice. No definite chief aim, and you just have another ho-hum year of just winging it. And some chiropractors are content with that. They're perfectly content to just show up and see people and leave, and they really don't do much planning, really don't have much definite chief aim. They'd like to see more people or collect more, but they just kind of get to the level of their personality, and that's about it. They get $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year. Maybe they may touch six, but they'll never get beyond that. Because if you want to go way beyond that and get to $200,000+ a month, take it from me, it's going to take a quality definite chief aim. Topic for today. Doberman philosophy. People around Winner's Edge know that there's this Doberman thing. There's some sort of Doberman talk. There's pictures of Dobermans. Talk about Dobermans, stories about Dobermans. Where does this come from? Some of you know, some of you don't. I will fill you in and we'll draw something from this. Carl Doberman back in the 1800s was a tax collector. And he also ran the local dog pound over in Germany. Kind of had a weird job with the city. Multiple roles. And he would find that being a tax collector was difficult work. And he had an affinity for animals as he took on the responsibility of being the dog pound guy. And so he had need and desire to create a personal protection dog. So he took several dogs and bred them and made the Doberman. It's like the only dog of its kind like this. A Doberman is basically a greyhound and a Rottweiler mixed together. Can you see that? Along with a few other types of dogs. There's like seven or eight dogs if you look at the history. But anyway, Carl Doberman makes the Doberman, the pure European fearless Doberman. Now, I'm going to bring this back to you in a second, but let me just develop the story for the couple minutes that we have here together. Now, as the Doberman got brought to the United States, it in part was Americanized. So you have a European Doberman and you have an American Doberman. The European Doberman is beefier. The head is more square. It looks more aggressive. The American Doberman has like a little skinnier waist. It looks like it has a little more greyhound in it, so to speak. Okay? A little more pointed features in the snout and all that. And as you read the qualities, family dog, oh, the American Doberman can be a wonderful family dog with socialization. The European Doberman can be a wonderful family dog with socialization. Da 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 da. And then the last point is the one where they differ. American Doberman, under stress and whatever, may retreat. European Doberman, under stress and whatever, will not retreat. The awesomeness of the Doberman, the fearlessness. I'm a kid, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, Great Falls, Montana. 707 47th Street South, 453-9365. In fact, that was my phone number, and it forms a T. Everybody in the school knew my number because it formed a T, and my name started with a T. Outside playing all the time. Fireworks, kick the can, riding my bicycle hundreds of miles. Playing with bugs, playing in the dirt, playing with trucks, playing guns, playing baseball with a tennis ball, doing wheelies from the cracks in the sidewalk, you know, to see how far you could wheelie. All of this outdoor fun, skinning the elbows, getting the bug bites, the bee stings. Drinking water out of the hose. And there were dogs in the neighborhood. There was a big sheepdog at the end of the block that would run and jump on you and knock you on the ground and lick your face. There was a cocker spaniel across the street. The neighbors had two dachshunds. Then there was a big collie named Duke that used to follow me around when I would do my paper route, and had a little mini, a miniature collie named Misty. And then there was a cool Malamute, a husky, that was down on my paper route on the left-hand side about 6 houses down. And of course, you got the lady with the white poodle, and you just got these dogs in the neighborhood. But the coolest dog, it'd be 6 o'clock or so in the evening, be outside playing. In this blue two-door, two-wheel drive Chevy truck that had a lift gate for the tailgate. It had a tailgate removed, and it had a thing that would go down and it would lift back up so the guy could put motorcycles in the back of the truck. His name was Ken Slack. Just like it sounds, like a pair of slacks. Ken Slack. At the end of the block, he owned a cool motorcycle shop called Slack's Cycle Sales. After work, Ken Slack would come driving by. Okay, cruising down the road, 47th Street, heading down to take a right turn on 7th Avenue South. And about 2 seconds later, 3 seconds later, this big, scary black Doberman would come smoking through your front yard, chasing the truck. That's how he would run his dog. He'd drive around the block, and the dog would chase him. And because it's a Doberman, he's not going to care about kids. You could throw a steak out there, a squirrel. He will never, ever leave that truck because he's bonded to his owner. Because he's a Doberman. Because a Doberman is a personal bodyguard. Yeah, they'll protect the junkyard in your house, but they're there to lock on, and they personally will protect you. It is something to witness their instinct in this fashion. And I was a paperboy. And at that point in time, you had to knock on the door and collect money for a month of papers. And it was like $7.20. And I had like 80 houses to deliver to. So if you do the math, okay, I would collect this money. And then I had to pay for the papers. And whatever was left over was my profit that I could buy my BMX bike with, which is what I did. And I'd knock on the door. And he would never open the screen door, and that dog would come up and he would stare right at my face because he was as tall as I was, with his big, huge, scary, black, pointed ears, and he would never open his mouth. He would just stare at you. Very cool. And he'd slide the money through, and I'd say, "Thank you, Mr. Slack," and I would go away. And I always thought the dog was so cool. Okay? Years later, established and practicing in life, decide to get a dog. There was no doubt what I was going to get. So I Google best Dobermans in the world. And it leads me to this place that's south of Salt Lake City. And so I get a hold of the guy, and I decide I'm going to go visit. So head out to Denver, do some office visits really quick in a couple client offices, drive 4 hours up through the mountains. This is in November, through Colorado winter hell, to Grand Junction. Visit two more chiropractic offices, Winter's Edgers, and then drive 4 more hours through nighttime Rocky Mountain wintertime hell to Payson, Utah. Pull up. There's a van, and it has a big wrap on it with all these pictures of Dobermans. We know we're in the right place. Some of you have heard this story before, but hang with me. Some of you, it's new. And there was just a typical house like most people grew up in, and a two-car garage that was separated, and they'd filled it in the breezeway and built it in and made it into its own room, connected the house to the garage that was separate. Walk in, nice clean linoleum floor, white walls, very simple but clean. And I meet the guy. We start talking. And I think that I'm talking to him, and I'm going to check out the dogs, and I'm going to determine. I realize he's interviewing me. Because he knows, because he knows I've never owned a dog. So he knows I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't know what I'm getting into. Doberman being one of the top five of the smartest dogs, one of the top five most powerful dogs, they're nothing to mess with. You have to be physically and mentally prepared, otherwise the dog will own you. And you can't have that with a dog like this. It has to be controlled. It has to have a commander. It has to be able to look up to somebody. It needs that. Okay? So we're sitting there and he says, well, would you like to see one? I said, well, of course. So he brings in this big Doberman and this sits there and we're talking a little bit and he's petting it. And then his son comes in, little like 7, 8-year-old boy, like a kindergartner. What are you doing, Dad? I'm showing these nice people one of our dogs, son. And the kid goes over and he starts pulling on this dog's pointed ears and playing with it, you know, a little bit. And then the guy says, well, would you like to see a demonstration? And I'm sure, of course, we want to see anything we can. The guy stands up. And as many of you know, dog obedience is done in German. It's spoken in German. Okay? It's called Schutzhund. It looks like Schutzhound, but I think it's Schutzhund. The name of the dog discipline and dog obedience, okay, sort of a world. Anyway, he stands up, gives a command, and the dog goes boom and sits right next to him perfectly. He gives another command. Whew, the dog whips around and goes to the other side and sits there perfectly looking up at him. Then he gives a command. And the dog starts to go after the kid. He starts barking and he backs this kid into the corner in this linoleum room. It's so loud and there's rah, rah, rah. And the dog's got foam coming off of his teeth and he's got his teeth in front of this kid's face and he's got this kid backed into the corner of this room and it's loud. And he goes, now, if I gave the command, he may hesitate for a second or two. Because he knows the kid, but he would do it anyway because he has to. Guy gives a command, boom, dog sits right next to him, takes him out of the command, kid comes back over and starts pulling on the dog's ears, and the dog starts licking his face again. And he goes, that's the difference between a Doberman and a lab. Drive. Then he brought out this look like a laundry basket. And I was sitting down and he brought it in and we're sitting there. And all of a sudden, these little furry black heads start popping out and he has like 6 perfect Doberman puppies. The offspring of Leo Betelgeuse, who is the son of the great Obi-Wan Kenobi de Grand Vinco, who at the time was considered one of the finest male Dobermans in the world. In fact, one of his cousins, Fedor Del Nasi, is considered by many to currently be the finest male Doberman in the world, who is my dog's great uncle. And my dog's grandpa is Obi-Wan Kenobi de Grand Vinco. In fact, if you just look up Obi, O-B-I, Doberman, you'll see him pop up. Because he's that popular of a dog. Same with Fedor Del Nasi. But anyway, so I picked the one with the yellow collar, and they were all incredible. You wanted every one of them. And home I go, knowing that this Doberman will be arriving here in a couple weeks. And boy, did my life change. It was the first time in my life I ever had to focus and love something more than I focused on and loved myself. And of course, now he's part of my life. Now, what are the lessons here? The lessons are the concept of drive, of discipline. Do I have to teach my boy to be in shape? He is a physical specimen. He's in perfect condition always. Do you have to teach him hygiene? No. Do you have to teach him to be loyal and dedicated? No. How many chiropractors are really on the chiropractic mission? The majority or the minority? I'm talking to these students all the time. They don't know what subluxation is. They don't really think that adjustments are that important. Okay, the schools have been completely taken over by banks. They're simply debt creation outposts for banks. If you want to get the chiropractic, you got to do it on your own. You got to join Winner's Edge. Winner's Edge is really the only place in the chiropractic universe that is anchored to serious chiropractic philosophy. We're orbiting around philosophy. We've got the philosophy books around us all the time. We've got the text. We've got the true safety pin cycles. We understand the principles. They are the anchor of the seriously awesome high-performance chiropractic office and chiropractic life. And that's what's happening in the Doberman land. They are true to something. They are true to what they are there to do. In fact, he is here and he's guarding me right now. He sits so he can see the front door and he has his back to me because that's what he does. It's amazing to watch. And if his mom were here, he'd be sitting with her and staring at me, eyes on both of us all the time because that's what he does. And he'll do it until he dies. Like I'm going to be anchored to the chiropractic principle until I die. I learned that from the dog. I would have done that anyway. So the Doberman philosophy is a philosophy of, yes, I'm going to lick your face. I love you and I appreciate you. Yet at the same time, I can flick a switch and be incredibly aggressive when that is required. I did a great presentation, The Sacred Gift of Anger. Problem with many people today is they cannot get angry enough. Men are criticized for getting angry. Are you kidding me? Men are supposed to get angry. Men are supposed to be aggressive. Men are supposed to be disagreeable from time to time. That's what makes a man a man. That's what makes a lion a lion, a grizzly bear a grizzly bear, a jaguar, a falcon a falcon. The range of face licking and aggressiveness. Oh, women, where are all the good men? There's a bunch of them still out there. So the Doberman philosophy of fitness, loyalty, dedication, devotion for eternity. The sad part is a dog like that maybe makes it to 12 years of age. Why only 12? I think it's because they give you 90 years of love and everything that they burn out. They give you everything. They give you everything. The dog gives you everything. When his takes his last breath, he will have given everything. He couldn't have done any more. He was 100% dedicated to you every second of the day. Many of you who are pet owners know this. But here's the point I want to make with so much of our material is do you see things like that and then apply it to yourself and say, am I that devoted and dedicated? Am I that in shape? Am I that loyal to the end? Do I have a principle I stand for? Can I lick people's face and be nice? And can I be aggressive when the time is required? See that? People see greatness next to them, but they don't have the imagination or the faculty to sit there and go, huh, am I like that? Am I part of the problem in chiropractic, or am I part of the solution? How many chiropractors today are part of the problem of the relationship of chiropractic and medicine, the problem of the subluxated relationship between chiropractic and the public, the problem of the subluxated relationship between chiropractors and each other? I am part of the solution. I want the reputation of chiropractic to be great among all professionals. I want chiropractors to get along. I want chiropractors to get better at their chiropractic. I want patients to love and the public to understand what chiropractic is and how great it is. See, my whole mojo is to be part of the chiropractic solution. And it's too bad I have to confront so many people that are part of the problem. Chiropractors making negative comments about other chiropractors on social media. Chiropractors ripping on this, chiropractors embarrassing themselves, chiropractors in public with foul language, chiropractors all thinking that they're awesome when they're actually not that smart at all, but they don't realize it because they're suffering from Dunning-Kruger syndrome. Okay, they're part of the problem. Quit being part of the problem. Again, but the people who are part of the problem lack the faculty of perception to see that they are part of the problem. They are blinded. There is a blindness in their mind that makes them so they are not able to see it. Like if you have a kid who is blind and you put up an x-ray and say, you see that spondylo? They could touch their nose to the x-ray film and they will never see it because they do not have the faculty of vision. Some people lack the faculty of perception enough to accurately assess themselves and their place. I know my place. I am nothing, and God is everything. There, that's my place. I look at my dog. Look at me. I am physically useless. He is a physical specimen. He can run 40 miles an hour and jump like a 6-foot fence easily. I can do nothing. Have you realized how frail humans are? He can smell one chunk of pepperoni from 50 yards away that's under 6 inches of snow. It's unbelievable. I can't smell pepperoni from a foot away because one of my nostrils is always clogged. You get the idea? So I want you to realize the awesomeness in creatures, the qualities that are incredible, and let's ask ourselves, do I have those incredible qualities? And let's have our heroes, of which many can be animals. Because they do stuff because it's their instinct and because they love doing it. He stares out the window waiting for you to come home because he loves you with everything. Wow. Do I love anything that much? Could I? I'm in awe. I want to be more like that. I have that desire. I hope you have that desire too. To see the awesomeness in God's creatures and draw in the fantastic qualities to make us more powerful as we interact with other people all the years of our life. Tori out.
Thanks for tuning in to the Cairo Success Podcast. To learn more about how you can create the dream practice and life today, visit us online at winnersedgeconsulting.com. Thanks again, and we'll catch you in the next episode.